A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, happy Saturday, everybody. Happy Saturday, Betsy.
Happy Saturday, Dan.
Why don't you very quickly, I'm going to put the timer on,
okay.
Very quickly tell people what happened to you on your vacation last week. You had a near encounter, an experience.
Well, yes, you make it sound so tragic. It was just a bear. It was just a bear. He lost
in the dark.
Yes.
While you're walking a dog.
Yeah, he lost his footing, hit the pole barn.
10 feet away from
me.
You.
Yes, and he wasn't scary or anything. I had
Not
seen
at
evidence
all.
Of him earlier, but it was something I don't care to experience again.
Well,
he
I don't need
harmless.
To ever experience that. I'll just look at pictures.
Okay.
Anyway, moving
yes.
on. Today, we've got a whole bunch of stuff, so let's just get to it. We're going to be talking about a very frustrating paint problem, tannin staining. If you've ever painted furniture or cabinets, chances are you've run into it, even if you don't know exactly what it's called. We're going to tell you how to avoid it.
Right. It's also time to bring those old petrified paint brushes back from the brink of death. Sure, we've all got those unusable paint brushes lying around, but before you decide to go out there and toss them, we're going to help you make them almost like new.
But first, we're going to talk about something very near and dear to my heart, cleaning, and then spilling, which I do a lot of.
Yes,
and then
just did.
Cleaning it up again. I did. I spilled all over the keyboard.
Yes, I'm excited because we are in the studio with John Schremser. He's the owner of Fiber Care Carpet and Rug Cleaning in Jenison. John? Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So we were talking before we sat down for this interview, and you were telling me about this special piece of paper that is behind glass in your office, and I think the listeners need to hear the story.
I have a thank you note from the White House dated early 2005 for working on cleaning a couple White House rugs.
That
I just
is
love
so
that.
Cool.
And the first thing I wanted to know is, do you still have jars of the White House dirt sitting around on your shelves? But you said you took pictures. There were lots of things you found there.
I did. We found, besides gum, a lot of grease from steaks. We found some chips of glass with the gold trim on it.
Fancy glass.
Yes, yes. So there was a number of things we found, and we cleaned it up, and that we're appreciative of having a thank you letter like that.
That's very cool.
That is
and
so
I guess,
cool.
you know, listeners are going to wonder, how in the world did that happen?
Right.
Very quickly, you said the manufacturer of the rug is
the owner
local.
Of the yes from Grand Rapids was manufactured in Grand Rapids. They've also manufactured several years ago the Oval Office rug, the presidential sealed rug.
Yeah,
and but anyways, the White House rug about 1,300 square feet.
It's 1,300 square
that
feet.
That is huge. That's the size of a lot of people's houses.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That
it took us 12
amazing.
Hours to clean it, and then a month later, the second one came because I always have a replacement, and it took another 12 hours to clean that.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
See, that's a cool story.
That
Not
is
everybody
such a
has
cool
cleaned
story.
A presidential rug.
Well, no.
I've spilled gum on important rugs, but never a presidential rug.
Yeah.
Maybe someday.
You spill a lot of
I'm going to put that on my bucket list. Spill at the White House. I could do that.
And then make sure you call John to come clean it up.
I've got connections now.
You'll come
behind
you.
Me, right? And clean up.
You bet.
Exactly.
Wow. All right. So, really, the reason we brought you here is to talk about spills, because a lot of us have carpet that has little spots all over it from whatever got spilled, and we don't know how to clean it up, and we just, a lot of times, especially me, end up making a bigger mess of whatever this spill was, and it just looks worse than when I started. What are some common spills that people have? And how should we be cleaning them up? Is it all the same, or is every spill a little different?
It's all specific.
Okay.
If you've got red wine, you spill red wine, for example, blot it up. Mild detergent would be fine. My suggestion is use a little 3% peroxide after you're done with that. It's an oxidizer. It will work on most wools. It will also work on nylon without usually removing any dye. And that'll take care of it. I tested that just to make sure I was accurate. I did last night in my home. I spilled put some red wine on a sample olefin and a wool sample.
Okay.
And this morning it was gone. So 3% peroxide will work. If not, you call a professional, of course.
Right.
Things like urine. Urine are a little more complicated. You've got this issue with whether there's a dye, you know, the yellow issue, or the odor issue. So you do want to clean it.
Right.
Urine, within the first hour, changes from a acidic to an alkaline salt.
Okay.
And so if it's an older urine, over an hour, 2 hours old, what you want to do is use a rinse, more like white vinegar, to dilute
white vinegar in water or just straight white vinegar?
White vinegar, 50-50 ratio.
Okay.
With just tap water. Okay. And flush it out, and that will help break up the salts.
Do we blot it back up with a dry rag? Do
yes.
we shop vac up the water? What's the...
Either way. Okay. Either way. Just don't rub that, because when you rub it, you start blooming the fibers, and that makes a distortion, which changes everything there.
Okay.
And then you can, again, we use a 3% peroxide on that.
And that is mixed with water again?
No, nope, peroxide just straight. Just straight. Yeah. You'll be perfectly fine with that.
This is the same peroxide when I cut myself?
Absolutely. That brown container.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just spray it on there. And,
I've got boatloads of that because I'm always injured.
Yeah, we know. There's like a blood trail usually that follows
Well, and there's
you.
A lot of foam
Which,
because
wait,
I'm using that stuff.
That
peroxide.
Brings me to the next question.
Blood. So we dealt with red wine and urine.
And urine.
So it sounds like a party I've been at. Now the blood.
Yep. Well, you do the same thing. Blot it up, or you can use a little detergent, or maybe a dilution of one spoonful of dishwashing detergent.
Okay.
But not your automatic dishwasher detergent. Don't use that.
Mm-hmm.
That might have a bleaching agent in it. You don't want to do that.
So like Dawn.
Like Dawn, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, blot it up then. And use a little peroxide. The peroxide will make the blood disappear almost immediately.
So peroxide is like the magic chemical, if you will, if you have a stain.
Does it take care of the soap? It removes the... How do we get the soap out?
Obviously, you want to extract a little bit with some you can use vinegar on that sense, white vinegar, or with a diluted ratio. But a lot of flushing with plain water will work, too.
And that's not going to soak in and damage the pad or anything like that? Or, again, am I blotting it up?
Dan, are you using a gallon of this?
Wow, he caught on quick to you.
Funny, but children,
but
we've spilled.
So true.
Get the bucket. Fill it. Dad, we can't carry it when it's full. Oh, I'll help. Yes, I use a lot of water. I shouldn't use that much water. We're all laughing.
I'm guessing
no. I'm taking that as a no.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I can take a hint. I can take a hint. Let's just get back to serious stuff, Betsy.
Okay.
Because now I've looked like a complete idiot. But I'm used
How's
to it.
How is that new?
I know. It's what everybody expects.
Right.
So we've dealt with blood, urine. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming we're talking dog urine.
And cat.
Or child.
Doesn't children. Matter. It's all the same.
Yeah, okay, it's all the same. My children have done that. That really, that's very sad when you find that.
Children, he's sorry for telling that
because
on
they're
the
dancing
radio.
And I'm playing a video game. This did happen. And I realized, okay, I better, but I'm really close in this game. I'm going to just give it a couple, and then all of a sudden
goodness.
They're done dancing and we're good. And then I found it later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if I'd have known
you
about
deserved
the,
that.
What I needed, let me see if I remember right. I don't remember. I needed water to blot it up first. Mm-hmm. Blot it up. Then what, vinegar?
A little detergent or
little
vinegar.
Detergent or vinegar. And then peroxide.
Yep.
So my medical supplies. Okay, what other common things do you run into?
Well, if you've got children vomit, you basically do the same thing. You know, the kids are, unfortunately, they get sick. And
my dog just did that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You do the same thing, a little detergent, a little diluted detergent.
Yeah.
And then I would just go ahead and put the 3% peroxide on it after that. Obviously, your carpet, a lot of different things depend on your carpet. If your carpet's new, it's going to have a protector, your carpet protector. It's going to have that shield on there. If it gets older, well, of course, you can go to the store and buy a aerosol can of 3M Scotch Guard or something like that to put it to renew some of that stuff. But that's going to give you a barrier to help save your carpet in the future. So investing in $5, $6, $7, $8, whatever that aerosol can costs is another benefit, too. You can get them at the Meijer.
What do you think of those? You like those? I mean, do you recommend those? Do you have a system that you recommend when you clean carpets?
Oh, I always recommend putting some type of protector on carpet. Absolutely. That comes in the mills. I saw how they put
so
that on.
So vomit is not a protector. We've got plenty of that. But you're saying a real protector.
Correct. Correct.
To protect against the vomit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, now this is a personal question because...
Oh, good grief.
Stop.
Sorry.
Because it's always about your questions. Now it's my turn because I actually have something.
My questions are good.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead.
Okay, so the dog was sick, what, a week ago or more? So I kind of cleaned it up. I can still see the spot. Is it too late to get that spot out, and how do I get it out now?
Usually not.
Okay. Okay.
Generally speaking, the darker the spots, they're removable. If the spot is lighter than the color of the carpet, you probably have color loss.
Okay.
Okay. I do dye, spot dye, and I'm familiar with that and done that many, many times. So we always like to think that a darker spot's a better spot, that's removable.
All right.
So, okay.
Guess I'm cleaning my carpet.
Now, those are all kinds of common stains that we could clean up and deal with to try to make sure that our carpets stay as nice as possible, as long as possible, despite the children and the dogs.
Right.
And me spilling
and
stuff.
And you. Mostly you.
But there are so many other things I want to talk about. You have raised some questions in my mind that I want to follow. John, can you hang with us over the break and pick this up on the other side?
Absolutely.
Excellent. We'll be back in the studio with John Schremser from FiberCare in just a minute. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, welcome back. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson.
And we're in the studio with John Schremser from FiberCare, talking about different things we can do to make sure our carpets stay as nice as possible for as long as possible.
Right.
Because we all spill. Right, Betsy?
Yes, especially you.
It's not just a me thing.
Mostly you think,
I do spill a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about some common things that we could do to take care of our carpets ourselves. And if you missed any of that, you're going to want to come back and catch it. So listen in the podcast, go to the archives page and re-listen, because if you've ever spilled red wine or bled all over the carpet or you've got an animal.
Or children.
He's dishing out stuff that I've not heard before.
Yeah.
But very easy chemicals to acquire. You probably have them in your home and can clean your carpets.
Yep.
But John, now I want to talk about the situations where I can't clean it myself anymore or I've damaged something. What other things do you offer as FiberCare that might help me out?
Well, you know, Dan and Betsy, I've always tried to do my best to learn more about the business.
Mm-hmm.
I've been several times, been down in Dalton, Georgia for a week at a time for advanced training, whether it be learning how to dye carpet. And if you're a retail store, you can call that side match. It was very, very, very specific. Two other things. I was a carpet inspector for several years as well. There's a lot. First of all, you want to make sure you vacuum. Vacuum frequently. Vacuum frequently. But when I say vacuum frequently, it's not just this one or two passes. It's north, south, east, west. You want to do that slowly to get, and we're all in a sandy area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to stop you for a second. Children, my children, the Hansen children, I want you to come close to the radio, turn it up, and listen. John, would you repeat how vacuuming is done?
Yeah, you want to go north, south.
North and south.
That's
on the
forward,
same day.
Yes. Yes. Forward, backward, and you want to go slowly. Because
slowly, children.
You want to do this frequently, and the reason why is because we're basically in a sandy area. Those things are abrasives. It's just like sandpaper, and it scratches the surface of that plastic or nylon, whatever you want to call it, that's a lustrous fiber, which we call carpet. And as you remove that, you want to remove it before it starts sinking down, tearing up the bottom part of the carpet as well.
So maintain that vacuuming.
Absolutely. You know, you're going to get years of use. I've seen the statistics, the test, and you don't need to have an expensive vacuum. It's nice.
That's good.
But just vacuum frequently. You know, the mills want you to vacuum 1 to 2 times a week, but quite frankly, if you vacuumed every day, you'll get, and I would like to say, because my experience is you can get 15 to 20 years out of a carpet.
Just by maintaining it.
Just by that.
So now you mentioned dyeing.
Yes.
The carpet.
Yep.
Dyeing the carpet. That sounded so dark.
Yes, it did.
Anyway, dyeing the carpet. Help me understand that. That's very interesting to me. I didn't realize that was a possibility. I mean, are we talking about a spot that I've screwed up in my carpet? You can actually bring it back?
Yes. Yes. As long as there's dye sites that are still good, we can do that. We do it frequently.
So a dye site, that means the spot in the carpet or in the fiber that will absorb the dye.
Nylon is...
see how smart that was?
Wow.
Nylon. Yes. I didn't mean to interrupt.
There's solution dyed nylon, which is, they take a bath and they put the dye in there, so it's internal. But most nylon is dyed externally. They dip it in a red, green, blue tank, and that's your dye. And so when you spill a bleach or cleaning products on there.
Oh, that's a bad day.
That's an oxidizer, and it will remove some of the color. We have pet issues that sometimes it happens with. But a lot of times it's just when somebody is cleaning their house and they're accidentally spilled some of the bleach on there. And it depends on the shape it is, how easy or hard. But I'll go and mix a bath and of very hot water with the right pH and all that stuff. And we'll blend it in there and make it look good again.
So what you're saying is you do for the carpet world like we do in the paint world. He custom matches.
I guess I was curious about that. You custom match on the site?
Absolutely. There's a couple of different things I can use. Obviously, you use your eye. You know, your eye is a good indicator. But we have plastic strips where we can clear plastic with 2.5% different color ratios. Mm-hmm. And like a grayscale. You have people who know what the grayscale is. Yeah. That we use something like that, and so it's a cheat sheet method. And it takes a little training and experience. Mm-hmm. And you can say, hey, you know, I like this. It looks pretty good, you know.
Is that something all carpet cleaning places will do? I've never heard of that before.
Neither have I.
You know, this is why you clean the White House rugs, isn't it?
I really think so. Like I have a passion for what I do. Absolutely. And I've always wanted to, if it's possible to do it, let's go try to do it, you know. And some things you can't do.
Right.
But on the other hand, I've also learned that I'm certified in repair and reinstallation. So I can cut the carpet out, that spot, and put a new piece in. And we do that frequently as well.
See, I saw that on your website. You had photos of that.
Yep.
So you're relying on the customer to have extra carpet? Or do you take it out of a closet? Or what do you do?
Well, you know, yes. I hope that they have a remnant in their basement stored. Mm-hmm. But if I have to, I'll take it out of a linen closet, which usually has a lower shelf to it. It's a small one, and it hides what's behind it. Sometimes a closet. Sometimes, if I have to, I'll take a floor register, lift it off out of the carpet, and slice that quarter inch or half inch, and join several quarter inch to half inch pieces together to make a small enough remnant or big enough remnant that I can put in that.
You could take it out from underneath the sofa, too. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there for you. I'm not an expert, but that makes sense to me. Just going to not be. And then the north south vacuuming thing. I'm not going to forget that.
Right, exactly.
5 years later when I'm done vacuuming my house.
Uh-huh.
One last thing. Paint spills. Okay. How would you handle a paint spill?
Well, most paint spills
are... fresh paint spill.
Yeah, latex paint. Yeah, that's water-soluble or water-based. And so that comes out. You might want to use you got to be cautious because you want to delaminate the carpet, depending how far down it is. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of flushing. A lot of flushing with the appropriate detergents or whatever cleaning solutions you have.
Now, what we have typically recommended is that we get a couple putty knives or something to get the... I mean, it depends on how much you've got on there. Blot the rest, flush it.
Mm-hmm.
And did you say the peroxide again? Was that the magic thing at the
end? Probably
No need for the peroxide.
Correct.
We can save that.
Yes.
Unless we spill blood in the midst of this. Because I probably will cut myself with a putty knife.
Somehow there will be blood involved.
There is so much that we could talk about. John, why don't you give our listeners your contact information if they want to get in touch with you, give you a call, stalk you, and ask questions about how to fix their carpet. How do they do that?
One of the best ways is just call us. You know, 616-667-8580. That's our office number. Our email address is office@fibercaregr.com. And I think that covers it.
Excellent. John Schremser from FiberCare, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Now, after the news, we'll be back in the studio, and we're going to tell you how to bring an old petrified paintbrush back from the brink of death. And we're going to make it usable again. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repco Light Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
And we're back.
We are.
I would like to say back from the dead, but we're not. Because that would really be a great lead-in for this segment. But
that
it would be
a
little dishonest. Well, I guess slightly. Really, as far as lines go, it would be pretty big since we've never, neither one of us, technically been dead.
Right. Thank goodness.
All. Not even for a split second.
Yeah, I would prefer not to be.
If I had to run into the bear that you ran into on vacation.
Right. There's a good possibility.
But yes. We're just plain old back.
We are just plain old back.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about bringing brushes back from the dead.
Yeah, you know, we tell people all the time to buy really good brushes. We like to use really good brushes.
And we do that not just because we want to sell really good brushes and make more money. That's
right.
Not what it's about at all.
It's not. It's about getting a better paint job when you use a good brush. It's also about how long they last.
And it's actually about saving you money in the long run.
Right, because
you buy a $20 brush, you can use it for years instead of buying the $6 and $7 brushes that you throw away every time.
Right.
But sometimes there's problems with the good brushes.
Right. Well, the caveat.
User error.
It's not user error. It's just something that happens. You know, we always tell you to take really good care of your brushes. Make sure that you clean them out really well when you're done. But we know that paint dries in them. We've been there. We have
or solvents that we don't completely wash out.
Right. We have a number of brushes right here that we use all the time that have the same problem. Eventually, they just get stiff and they really need a whole overhaul
to
make
them. You pull
them
out of the
new.
Package ready to go, and it's like a little board on the end. It's like you could smack somebody with it.
Yes.
It's not soft and pliable.
No, they're petrified.
You could use
if
it
you
to maybe flip an egg.
Right.
But you can't use it for a whole lot of anything.
We had
else.
A couple of those.
So you're sitting there with a $20 brush that really can only be a spatula or like a little tiny tennis racket-ish thing.
Right.
And now you're pretty upset. What do you do?
Well, the first thing is, every time you clean a paintbrush, you should make sure that you're using good brush cleaning practices, because there are different things that you have to do for different types of paint.
Is this going to be as boring as good dental hygiene stuff?
No, it's actually
way more
fun.
Tell me to brush like 32 times on one side.
No, don't you remember Bob Ross and his paintbrush flipping thing?
The curly-haired painter guy?
Yeah, you get to do that.
The happy clouds?
Yes.
So tell us how to do good brush maintenance and make it snappy and fun, Betsy.
Okay, I'll try. So the first thing you need to do is obviously remove as much paint as humanly possible. So wipe off any excess paint on a piece of cardboard or paper or something.
On your work shirt?
You could do that, I suppose, but I think most people would choose to do
probably
it on the paper.
People. Do you really want to be most people?
Well,
be
in
unique.
This case, yes, I don't want it soaking through on my skin. Thank you. Anyway, if you're using latex paint, all you need is some warm water, and I always like to use Dawn dish detergent. It's just a little bit milder. If you're using oil paints, you need to clean out that brush with paint thinner or whatever solvent is recommended on the product that you're using for cleanup. And then you got to make sure that you finish with the Dawn and the warm water to get any of the residue from those solvents out of the brush, because you don't want those sitting in there. That's what helps harden those bristles up and makes a mess of the brush. Now, if you're using something like a shellac or perhaps a shellac primer, then you need to be using denatured alcohol, or you can even use ammonia and warm water. I think.
Or in that instance, you could use a brush that you can throw away.
That
not everybody's
is my
gonna
preferred method.
Clean up a really nice brush with one of those products.
When I use that white pigmented shellac primer, I always just use a cheap brush because I don't want to have to clean it up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That
go
might
ahead
be the way
that.
To go in that regard.
Yes. So, anyway, if you do those things, then you're going to be better off. Make sure you're wrapping those brushes in some paper towels or paper when you're done. That's going to put the bristles back to where they need to be so that they don't splay out all over the place.
Exactly. If you leave it undone or don't do that, they will splay out. Is that what you said?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they look like little feather dusters.
Yes. It's not good, and it's not going to give you a good clean line the next time. So that's a critical step. Make sure you're using a brush comb. I know a lot of people may not know about those. Make sure when you're cleaning, you're using that, because we're going to talk about that when I tell you how to get rid of the petrified paintbrush. When you're all done, make sure you're storing your paintbrushes hanging up. Don't put them in something where all the bristles are going to get gnarled and bent. Make sure you're
or
hanging
splayed.
Them up. Or
gnarled, splayed. Betsy is just throwing down the language here.
I know. Well, and if you have that cardboard cover.
Stop pointing at me, Betsy.
I like
the
point
at you. You are excited about this.
I am, because this is something people throw that cardboard cover that brushes come in away.
The sleeve?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That is actually there to keep the bristles nice and even. and make sure that they don't get damaged.
It's not just something to put the price sticker on and the name. It actually serves a purpose.
Yes.
We're talking about brushes and brush maintenance on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show. Now, let's get to the brushes that are no longer usable.
No.
They're petrified.
Yes.
We pull them out. Mm-hmm. We didn't clean them well. We didn't do anything that you just said, or we didn't do it as well as you recommended. Now, what do? Throw the brush away and buy new?
No. Well, and there, let's clarify, there are different stages of this petrified. I mean, there are the ones that are completely solid, and then there are the ones that up by the ferrule, that's the metal band that goes all the way around the brush. Up there, it starts to get stiff. You don't quite have the flexibility in the bristles like you used to have. So you do want to, at that point, start cleaning it a little bit more heavily with some of the things we're going to talk about. I scoured the internet for this to see what the different methods are. And I came across one guy who had, you know, like a 6-step process. And
you got through the third step and I said, I am not going to do that.
Yes.
I am going to buy a new brush.
Exactly. So one of the ones I really liked was hot vinegar, not quite boiling. I liked it because a lot of us already have vinegar in our home, so you don't have to go out and buy something special to do this. They just recommend that you put the brush in like a baking sheet or something like that. Pour the hot vinegar over the bristles, let it sit for about 10 minutes, use that brush comb that I talked about earlier.
Very inexpensive.
Yes, exactly.
Pick them up at any Repco Light or Port City Paints.
Yep. I think about $2, $3, something like that, maybe. Mm-hmm. I liked this method, but it took longer than 10 minutes. I left it overnight, and you know the vinegar cools off. So unless you're continually rewarming that vinegar.
That was where the
problem.
If you could keep it hot.
Right.
But
it
don't
might work
put it
faster
on the stove and keep it going. That doesn't
no
make any sense.
Well, so, they specifically say don't boil it.
Exactly.
You know, close to boiling, but not quite boiling.
So once it cooled down, it lost its effectiveness.
Yes.
But you said leaving it sit overnight, it worked
just
fine. Yeah,
it worked great. Then make sure you, again, wash it out with soap and water and let it dry like we talked about previously. There was also one, I was really intrigued by this, fabric softener.
It smelled so much better than the vinegar.
Oh, yes, it did. It made the whole room smell fantastic.
But did it work?
I left it overnight. It was marginal. It did okay, but it wasn't great. So it's really not something that I would recommend unless that's all you have available.
So the vinegar works, mm-hmm, and it's good for any kind of brush?
Yes.
The fabric softener, probably mm-hmm skip that one. It's
yeah,
not worth it.
Yeah, I would skip it, and I don't think I would use it on a natural bristle brush. I would only use it on a synthetic, which is any man-made material. You know, nylon, polyester, anything like that. Now, the last option that I tried is actually a brush and roller cleaner. You can buy it at Repco Light and Port City Paint stores. It's a great one for those natural bristle brushes that you have, but don't use it on any of those other synthetic brushes because it gets...
No, it will work on a nylon.
It works on a nylon, but they say not to use it on certain other ones, so just be careful. It's a little wonky in that
because
fashion.
It's a hotter solvent
and
that could actually dissolve
like it too.
Or mess mm-hmm with the bristles. But in a natural
yeah
bristle, so something that you would use with oil-based paints,
mm-hmm, yep,
you rinse it out with mineral spirits and you
right
get it out the next day or the next day, a couple weeks later, and it's hard and stiff. It's
yep
petrified.
Yes.
You don't have to throw it away.
Right.
You go to this product, it will get it back to good, right?
Yeah, it absolutely did. I left it for quite a few hours. It made it just like new. You do, again, have to wash it. Any of these methods, you have to wash with warm water and soap to get
afterwards
all of the residue and things like that. Take the brush comb through it as you're washing.
But basically, you just poured it into a quart can
mm-hmm
and put the brush in it. And you
yeah
used clamps of some sort to suspend the brush.
Yeah, you don't want the bristles on any of these just laying in the bottom of something and getting crushed and again distorting them. So you want to suspend it within whatever you're using.
So you used those great big alligator clips.
Yeah, I used one of those and I used an actual clamp that I found in the shop. So
yeah, just clamped
we'll
it around,
photos online
around the brush.
Yeah.
And rested it on the rim of the quart can and
right
it kept it just off the bottom.
Right. So we'll put pictures of that in the show notes. Now, if you're thinking of painting furniture, possibly cabinets in the near future, you're going to want to stay tuned because we've got some info that could save you an enormous headache in the long run. That's next. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung,
The Repco Light Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, Betsy, years back.
Yeah.
Let me tell a story about a paint mishap.
Okay. Imagine that.
Long ago.
Mm-hmm.
In the land of
far,
Zealand.
Far, far away.
No, it's not that far away.
Oh.
In a little blue house on Park Street.
Yes.
Lived a little man, me.
Yeah.
Who painted his upstairs cabinets. They were bare wood.
Okay.
Because the upstairs was completely unfinished until I got there and brought my miraculous DIY powers to the scene.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I got to painting the cabinet doors bare wood. So I rolled on a water-based primer and sat back waiting for it to dry so I could get that finished paint on there.
Right.
And in minutes, I noticed all this brown streaking starting to rise to the surface. Mm-hmm. And I realized I had a little bit of a problem. So I made some phone calls because I worked at Repco Light. I had just started and made some phone calls and got some answers and found out what I was dealing with.
Yeah, I'm guessing that anyone who has ever painted bare wood with water-based paints or primers has run into a similar situation, you know, whether it's cabinets, furniture, wood trim, whatever, they've seen it. And it especially happens with lighter colors. Usually with darker colors, you don't so much notice it.
But it just hides.
Right. But especially
it still happens.
White.
Exactly.
It
jumps
noticeable.
Right out at you. It's very frustrating and it's very confusing for a lot of people.
Right.
And typically what it is tannin staining. Now, tannins are naturally occurring chemicals in woods.
Yes.
And it's only a problem if you're trying to paint the wood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, staining and varnishing it, you're really not going to see these things.
Right.
But it's when you paint the wood and you use the wrong primer or you skip a primer entirely. I use the wrong primer.
Right.
Other people skip it entirely.
Right. Well, it's a problem because those tannins are actually water extracted. So when you put that water-based whatever over top, it starts to pull all of those to the surface. And usually this happens with bare woods like cedar, redwood, mahogany, especially the knots in pine.
See it a lot in pine.
We do see it a lot. And also oak, even if it's been finished with any sort of lacquer or polyurethane, they still tend to come out.
We did. We talked to a contractor, Dean Veltman from Veltman Painting, and he does a lot of repaints of oak cabinets in people's kitchens. And he said, basically on every job that he did an oak cabinet repaint, he saw some bleed through.
Right.
You know, he wasn't sure if it was this tannin staining, if it was something different because of the open graining of the wood.
Yeah.
But either way, every single one that he did, he saw some of this. So he switched his process entirely.
Right. Now, if you run into this in your project, it's going to be really frustrating. But the good news is it can be fixed, and even better, it can actually be avoided. You just have to put the right primer on there. So let's break that down.
Let's break it down. Break it down, Betsy. Boom. Chicka boom, boom.
Wow, we can do
just
it without
keep
that.
Boom, boom. I'll just keep doing this.
Okay,
you see me nodding?
Yes, I see you nodding. So, if you're working with bare wood, then you want to use a solvent-based stain blocking primer or some sort of sealer. Don't, under any circumstances.
Oh my goodness, she just made the most violent hand motion. She just slammed her fist down like a guillotine in the French Revolution.
Don't use a water-based stain blocking primer. I know it looks ideal and it looks very reliable because it says stain blocker in the name, but don't use it.
We have not seen reliable results with water-based stain blockers.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people have had great results, but it is not generally always repeatable.
Right.
And we don't want you to deal with something that is hit or miss.
Right.
So there's a purpose for those,
yes,
but do not use these in this situation. You're going to want a solvent-based stain blocker.
Yes.
Like, let's give a couple examples.
The first option is a white pigmented shellac. Now, this is like the silver bullet. It works every single time. You never have to worry. It's going to cover wood stains, water stains, smoke stains, everything. It dries fast, which is great. It sands really well. It gets rid of all of the odors that might be associated with all these different types of stains. But the problem is, when it dries fast, it makes it a little bit harder to work with, especially if you're brushing and rolling cabinets, things like that.
It stinks.
It really
You think oil-based
stinks.
Products stink.
Yeah.
This one's got a real funky smell because it's an alcohol-based product, so it really has a kick to it.
Well,
it's very thin
it's like
runny.
Rolling water on, so you end up with it everywhere. You will end up wearing it.
Now, the contractor that we talked about in the beginning, this is what he switched to, but For a homeowner, there's another option that's going to be a little easier to brush and roll, and that's going to be an oil-based stain-blocking primer.
Right. It's going to be a little bit more DIY-friendly, and we've actually got a number of options in this type of paint. For exterior bare wood, you want to use the number 65 primer from Repcolite, and I say...
A brilliant name. It is so creative. Number 65.
Well, primer. I want to point out that that one is specifically for exteriors, so you can do a very large section with it, and it's going to be okay. Okay, a lot of the other stain blocking primers that we're going to talk about say for interior exterior, and they're only spot priming on the exterior. You're fine interior using it wherever, but it's only for little spots.
So that's very important because we have seen big failures because people didn't realize that that interior exterior only meant spot priming outside.
Right.
65 primer from Repcolite, you could use that.
Everywhere.
Over the entire surface outside.
Yep, you sure can.
So when it comes to interior, there are so many different products here that we could recommend. We'll give you just a few of them.
Yeah.
One of them would be Fresh Start All-Purpose Primer from Benjamin Moore.
Yep.
Another one is Prime Lock, which is a stain blocker from Insulex, which is a Benjamin Moore company.
Right.
And then there's another product called Odorless Oil Primer, also from Insulex. All of those will work in varied situations.
Yeah, they're great because they're going to seal in those tannins, which is what we want. They are great to brush and roll, so they're a whole lot more user-friendly, and they're going to dry relatively quickly, so that's a major plus. Now, the only thing I want to say about that odorless primer that you talked about is that there are still fumes that happen with it. There's a different odor than normal primer, and there are still the fumes, so you still have to ventilate.
Right. People miss that sometimes and don't take the proper precautions, and they can run into some trouble. So if you use the odorless, you've got to ventilate. Overall, though, if you're looking for stain blocking, we'd kind of recommend that you just go towards that Prime Lock or something else out there. Only use the odorless if you really absolutely need an odorless product.
Right.
All right, that's bare wood.
Yes.
But what about varnished or lacquered wood?
Well, typically on that, if you're painting over varnished furniture or cabinets, you can go to the Stix primer. It's a bonding primer. It's going to stick to whatever you've got really well. It's going to reduce some of the chipping that you kind of see on cabinets, but it's not a stain blocker. So for that oak, even if it's finished oak, you don't want to use this. You still want to go to that oil-based stain blocker we talked about.
But if you're doing like a pine table that's varnished or polyurethane, you want to put a new coat of paint on that, go ahead and use Stix and then your finished paint. If you've got cabinets other than oak and they're varnished, go ahead with Stix. Just be aware that if you do happen to see some yellow or brown discoloration coming through the Stix primer, it's not likely, but it is possible.
Yeah.
If you do see that, then you'd either want to come back and spot prime those areas with one of those stain blockers we talked about. If it happens to be bad, That's just one of those sad situations.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'd want to go and reprime everything with the oil-based stain blocker. Now, people might ask, why not just do the whole thing right off the bat with an oil-based stain blocker? And the reason is, most of the time, it's not necessary on a varnished cabinet that's not oak.
Right.
And you don't have to use the oil-based, and people don't want to if they don't have to.
Yeah. One thing to be aware of, though, there is a difference between seeing stain through your primer and an actual bleed through in that primer. Now, just seeing the stain, a lot of people see it because primer is not thick. It's a little bit thinner. So,
and some of these stain blockers are sealers.
Right.
So they don't hide.
Exactly.
And you see the stain underneath it.
Yes.
That doesn't mean it's bleeding through.
Exactly. A bleed through is when it actually comes to the surface and you can almost see it sitting on top. So just be aware of those differences.
And don't just keep layering coat after coat on there if all it is just something that you're seeing through. Just be aware of that.
Yeah. We know that that's a lot of information, and it all came at you really fast, so we're going to break it...
Really, really fast.
Yes. We're going to break it all down in the show notes for you. Oh, my goodness. Again. Or you can just stop out at any Repcolite or Port City Paint and ask. We always have the answer to help you get through your project.
We do.
We do.
But that is all the time we've got today for dishing out answers and such.
Yes.
And boom chicka bow pows or whatever I was doing. If you want to hear this episode again, especially my breaking it down.
Right.
You can go to repcolite.com and check us out.
Right. And make sure you're liking us on Facebook. We've got some cool new things that we're putting up there, some color inspirations that you're probably going to want to see.
And remember, whatever you're doing in West Michigan today, there is a Repcolite or a Port City Paint store right near you, and we're open till 3 o'clock this afternoon, and I'm pretty sure, Betsy, that it's Dance Party Saturday this week. Am I right on that?
I've heard rumor.
All right. Check it out. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And if you do happen to go to our Port City Paint Store on Dance Party Saturday today, mm-hmm. Roy over there is definitely willing to teach you to boogie like there's no tomorrow.
Did you really just say boogie on the radio?
Said boogie on the radio.
Oh, man.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening.